Welcome to We Mentor Mondays podcast with Nancy. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your peers on the entrepreneurial journey of self-discovery. Learn something new from our stories today. Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast program. Today in the studio for a second mentoring conversation, we have Andrew Krause, who's co-founder of the coaching business InventRight.com. Andrew was born and raised in California's Silicon Valley, where he grew up being surrounded by passionate innovators and what he identified early on as an unhealthy obsession with venture capital. When he discovered licensing, it was like a light bulb went off. Everyone gets excited about raising money, he said, but licensing is much more sexy. For one, there's so much less financial risk, and yet still so much opportunity. He got excited about teaching inventors how to harness the power of open innovation and continues to be as excited, if not more, today. As the day-to-day manager of InventRight's operations for over 13 years and its head coach, Andrew has seen it all and coached inventors through it. At this point, our students have experienced every scenario you can possibly imagine, he says, whether it's communicating with a company that has never licensed an idea from an outside inventor before or signing a multi-million dollar deal. We've done it. He continues to be inspired by the opportunity to work with people who are not only passionate about their ideas, but also committed to making money for them. He began coaching inventors over 17 years ago as the president of the Inventors Alliance Group in the San Francisco Bay Area. Andrew grew Inventors Alliance into one of the most active and well-established associations in the inventors community across the country. That's also where he met co-founder Stephen Key, who wrote One Simple Idea. He began coaching inventors over 17 years ago as the president of the Inventors Alliance Group in the San Francisco Bay Area. Andrew grew Inventors Alliance into one of the most active and well-established associations in the inventors community across the country. His expertise in the field of innovation was federally recognized when he was asked to advise the last President Council on what changes he could make to the United States Patent and Trademark Office to better serve independent inventors. He has also been featured on National Public Radio's Science Friday and as a licensing expert at the United States Patent and Trademark Office conferences. Several years ago, spurred by the feeling that the Bay Area was getting just a little too crowded, Andrew moved to Henderson, Nevada with his wife, where they are raising their daughter. How old's your daughter?
She's almost five.
Almost five. Oh, sweet age.
She's cute.
I have one daughter, too. She's 15, so she's 10 years older, and she's driving a car. The time goes so fast. And your last comment that you make, too, in your bio is, every day someone tells us how much we've helped them, and that means the world to you and to Stephen. I am impressed with the dedication that you have and the inspiration that you bring and the interest that you continue to invest in helping people to really bring their products to market.
So thank you.
Yeah, well, thank you for that, Andrew. So we learned in our first mentoring conversation that we're connected through Greta Larson, who has invented the drip clip. And we learned that you ran the Inventors Group for about 18 years. And during that time was when you met Stephen Key and you realized that monthly meetings weren't enough. That inventors, you know, they got pumped up and neither were like really long-term, long weekends where you invest hours and hours, you know, inspiring people and then they walk away from the conference and they really need one-on-one coaching.
Right, because we weren't into selling something that didn't work. And the Inventors Group I was running didn't work because people would get really excited from a successful inventor speaking or patent attorney or something, but then the whole month would pass and then you'd see them again in the next meeting and they hadn't made any progress because they needed their hand held. At the beginning, we thought that doing these live weekend seminars would be great, like 8 hours Saturday, 8 hours Sunday. It was grueling. people told us we were fantastic. They're like, oh my God, you guys are the best. I finally understand this stuff. You know, I can do this now. But they weren't, a lot of them weren't calling companies, and a lot of them weren't doing licensing deals. And Steve and I weren't into selling something that, it didn't matter how great people thought we were for providing this really hard to find information, but the information wasn't enough. They needed hand-holding.
Yeah.
So as with anybody in general, and particularly a creative group such as, you don't have to call yourself an inventor. Most people don't. Product developer, inventor, person with ideas, whatever. You know, a lot of creative people are a little ADD, a little all over the place. Or even if you aren't, it's a process that you're not familiar with, because everybody's familiar with venturing, starting your own company, selling a product yourself. But they just have a vague idea of, like, could I sell my idea to a company and have them do all that work? But no idea how to go about it. And most people, their knee-jerk reaction on how to go about that is incorrect. Whether it's somebody, whether it's a housewife with no business experience, or whether it's a very experienced business person, that they have experience in venturing and selling products themselves, but no experience in licensing. So the combination of having a creative group and also having a business model that people weren't familiar with was creating problems. But when you hold somebody's hand, they realize it's really not that difficult.
Yeah. And your, well, education is powerful. And so you're giving them the education and the tools and also the resources, it sounds like.
I don't like the word education.
Okay.
I have a bias towards, I don't like the word education. Education and information is just that. Real life experience to me is what I like. So when I can guide a student through making their first sell sheet or calling their first company or actually having real life experience and responding to a company that showed interest,
yeah,
or analyzing the fact that they don't have to make a prototype, they could just get a rendering done and save themselves a tremendous amount of time and money and heartache or whatever the situation is.
Yeah.
Real life experience to me, it's more of an apprenticeship, if you will. Education to me is just, I don't know. It's just, education is like information. And people are always asking themselves, well, how does that apply to me?
Yeah.
At the same time, we are educating people. So don't get me wrong. But
no, I hear it's not academic.
It's not, right. You can make it academic, but then that's not real life experience. It's got to be both.
So yeah, you're melding real life experience with education that people need at the time. So it's not an academic exercise.
When you're educating them on something, it's on their real life project, and they're watching a training video on how to make a sell sheet. But then they're getting the one-on-one advice from their coach, plus they're actually doing it.
Yeah.
Or contacting a company or whatever else. So I do believe in education, don't get me wrong. I just kind of saying that to shock everybody. But it's got when it's not in conjunction with real life experience, I put very little value on that.
Yeah.
On education with real life experience. I don't like that. I don't think people move forward with just education.
Yeah. Yeah. And especially entrepreneurship, because it's all about the doing.
Yes.
And making things happen. I would like to turn a little bit to Stephen Key's book, your co-founder and partner with you, that you both have gotten behind the title of the book, which is One Simple Idea. I mean, it came out of the work that you were doing together. And I was struck by Stephen's dad, who was an executive at General Electric, gave him like some very important advice. First, find something that doesn't require your presence. Second, find something that doesn't require your hands. And third, make sure it has a multiplying effect. Mm-hmm. I thought that was really like profound advice. Did you also get some really sound advice from somewhere along the way that has helped you in your career?
Yeah. Did I get some advice that's helped me in my career? I think that the best advice that I've gotten was always proven through real life experience when I can see it working.
So you like to have evidence.
Because I think getting advice from somebody and then not acting on it, what's the point of that? But if you act on it, so did I get advice from somebody in my career? Yeah, I actually had this woman. She was actually a member of my Inventors Association, and she was a life coach or success coach. And it's funny that Steve and I started a company doing coaching. It's ironic because I'd never gotten coaching before, and I didn't really get coaching from her, but she's a friend of mine. I sat down a cup of coffee with her one day, and it's a total cliche, but she was kind of emphasizing with me, and I don't know, it was just in this point in time, it was the right point in my life.
Yeah.
Do what you love. And at that time, I think maybe that was around the time Steve and I were thinking about starting InventRight. And I really loved helping inventors through my Inventors Association, but I realized it wasn't enough. So it's a total cliche, but you do what you love and the money will come. I truly believe that.
Yeah.
If you do it just for the money, though, I don't think it's the same.
Without the passion and the love for what you're doing, I just don't think you have the wherewithal to make it through when the times get tough.
Yes, and Steven and I with InventRight in the early years, we had some tough times. You know, it took us a long time to kind of figure out what was the formula that really works. And after 17 years, it's been 17 years now, we've got it down to a science. But we're always reinventing ourselves. You can always do it. You can always do it better. But yeah, you got to love it. And I always liked helping people.
Yeah. Yeah, I can totally hear that in your voice and your passion behind helping people really succeed. And your hands-on approach, I think, is what works too.
I think maybe it's a cynical way of looking at it, but I think most people don't go into a business with the intention of helping people, but I can kind of understand that. I mean, if you've got a widget or whatever, but even on that level, if you've got a dog toy and you want to help dog owners have more fun with their dogs, that's helping people.
Yeah.
You can help people on many different levels. But I think that's something that's unusual about our company. And I don't know if you can find a way to do that. It could be your employees. It could be, you know, because people just, when you depersonalize what you're doing as a business, then it's, if it's not important to you, why are you doing it? But for me, that's the way it always was. I guess clueless. I was naive. I was whatever. But in the end, it ended up paying off. So when people are saying follow your passion, I know it sounds like a cliche, but when you've lived it like I have, it makes a massive difference.
Yeah, it's real. In chapter 2 of One Simple Idea, what is the One Simple Idea concept in this new world of innovation?
In my own words, what I think,
yeah.
The product ideas you come up with don't need to be complex, so the products can be simple. And then with licensing, the process of getting those products out into the world can be simple. So I think to me, One Simple Idea has a lot of meanings, both with the products and then also with the process of licensing. You don't need to start this big company, have all these employees. You just need to pitch 1 to 30 companies, preferably at least 10 to 30, and only one needs to be interested.
Yeah.
And the product does not need to be complex. It can be. You can still apply our One Simple Idea book to a complex product. But so that's the basis is if you knew Stephen and myself, we're all about whenever you can keep it as simple as possible.
And you talk about the concept of open innovation, which is totally about keeping your idea simple and also keeping your business simple.
Absolutely.
Through the licensing.
But open innovation just means that companies are open to receiving ideas from outside product developers and inventors. So if you're selling a dog toy or a barbecue spatula or a medical device, that they're open to receiving ideas from the outside. And it's hard to find companies now that aren't. Now, they don't all hang out a shingle saying we're open to outside ideas. But if you get a hold of the right person in the company, they'll say, oh, yeah, send it on over. And that's new. That's I'd say if you went back 15 years ago, it wasn't as prevalent. But now, it's very prevalent. So open innovation means, to me, means companies are open to ideas from the outside, that they don't all need to be done with their research and development internally. And most companies don't even have a research and development department. So when you come to them with your idea, if they don't like it, they don't have to pay you a dime. If they like it, they can compensate you. It's a beautiful thing. You're their free research and development department.
Yeah. Excellent. You also focus on the nimbleness. So why is being close to the market, being creative and motivated and quick on your feet so important right now? Since that has always been the engine behind small business, what has shifted in this new age?
Well, I think the consumer has an insatiable appetite for new products these days. And I think a lot of companies have a hard time keeping up. So when they're open to innovation and you can show them your new product ideas and then they can license them, they can stay competitive. So I think it's just got worse or better, depending on how you look at it. But I think it's better for product developers, without a doubt. I think for companies, it makes it more challenging. But you constantly need to have the next iteration, the next version, the next best product. And there's a lot of competition. Now, fortunately, for product developers and inventors, you can be that for them.
Yeah. You know. Are there some clients that you don't work with or products that you just don't believe in or support?
Well, you know, it's funny. People think you have a coaching mentor business, just take anybody on, but we don't. If somebody isn't willing to do the work, and that's not really directly answering your question, I don't want them as a student because they're not going to do a good job,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Are you talking about specifically product specific? Is there somebody that we wouldn't want to work on this type of product or that type of product?
Yeah. Are there any certain types of products that you're like, I just can't?
I don't really get people that have like some sort of product that people that they've been, most people that sign up with our program, they've been reading our book, One Simple Idea, or they've been watching our YouTube show. They know us. They feel like they know us already.
Yeah, right.
It's a fun question. I don't get people that are like, I want to create this device that's going to hurt people or something, you know, or it's going to steal people's money from their bank account. I don't get I'll cross that road when I get there, but I don't have that. One thing that's interesting, though, I do get a lot of people now that marijuana is becoming legal in a lot of states. I do get people that have vaping devices or other devices, you know, for smoking marijuana or various other things. And I didn't see that so much in the past.
Oh, know? Sure. Yeah.
But we don't really judge one way or another there, you know.
Yeah, you look at what the inventor is trying to do and how they can get it into the market. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, but I don't have people that want to work on unethical products. So I would have to cross that bridge when I get there. I haven't had that happen yet.
Yeah. <That's>
I guess everybody has their own ethics, though, you know. So I don't know. But
okay.
If that's an issue, I'll cross. But 17 years hasn't been yet, so we'll figure it out when we get there.
Sure. And in your book, there's a formula that is described on page 30. It's simple idea plus existing technology plus three or more players in the market equals a license. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about that formula?
Yeah.
And how it works?
Well, I think that if you have a product and it's a variation on something that already exists, then technology could be a bottle cap opener, it could be a computer, it could be a medical device, it could be anything. So I think I'll give you a real simple example. So let's say you had this new barbecue spatula and it had a bottle opener on the end of it and it twisted the bottle cap into a fun shape. So you're sitting around with your friends, barbecuing, drinking a beer, and you use that bottle cap opener and it twists in a fun shape and you hand it to your friend. Okay.
Okay.
If you can verify an existing market, if you could look at the marketplace, and Google Images is a good place to do that, not regular Google Images, and you see that there's 15 barbecue spatulas with bottle openers, you know that feature sells well. There wouldn't be 15 companies putting bottle cap openers on barbecue spatulas if it wasn't a feature people wanted. So now you have this new technology, if you want to call it that, that twists the bottle cap into a funny shape, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think if you can verify that the technology is there to do it and that there's an existing market, That's huge.
Yeah.
So, and then you don't want to work on the three or more players in the market. If you only have three companies to call, that's three chances for success. If you have 30 companies to call, that's 30 chances for success. So in the example I just gave, if you notice there's 15 different companies selling barbecue spatulas with bottle openers, there's probably 40 selling them without, and they could take that on too, right?
Oh, I see.
So, so one, verify there's a market, an existing market. You may have a product variation. That's great. And then if you have to, in order to make this barbecue spatula with a bottle opener, if you have to completely re-engineer the way the machines do it, that's tough. If it's just simply a stamp of the metal that, you know, it just, the bottle cap opener itself on the barbecue spatula just is shaped slightly different, that's not a whole new technology. You're just saying, here's what you need to do. But if you say it needs to be made out of titanium space steel or something, and it has to have, and it's like, and they're just like, huh? You know, how are we going to implement that? So the point we're making there is, if the company that you want to make it has to go through tremendous effort to create all new technology to make this product happen, that's a little tough. So
that's cost prohibitive.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Simple idea, existing market. When you look at the manufacturing, oh, they can make that over there, so they can make this. Literally, you can do that most of the time.
Yeah.
And then not just like one company. I want to license this one company. Well, you're going to make your sell sheet, file your provisional patent, do all these things and just call one company? What if you could call 30? You know?
So it's helping people think broader than how they might be thinking currently.
Yes.
About how how many manufacturers.
And if it doesn't meet those criteria, might put it in the closet, move on to another one that has 30 companies and doesn't have a bunch of manufacturing issues.
Yeah.
But people freak out about the manufacturing. I don't understand manufacturing. Well, if you can look at similar things and go, well, if they can make that and they can make that over there, I think they can make this. You can literally tell a company that. Well, there's this product over here and that's selling for $9.95 and this other one's selling for $12.95. I think you're just going to take these two parts and put them together like, oh, yeah, okay. And they verify there's a product in the market with those types of features and maybe yours is slightly different. But it's just amazing how simple licensing can be. There are more complex situations, of course, and we understand how to handle those. But when you're evaluating what products to work on, working on the simple ones. So it's a great formula on page 30 there you referenced.
Yeah. And you have a second formula that has to do with the manufacturing. So you've got a unique idea, plus it needs new technology, and then you have one or two major players in the market equal manufacturing. Can you describe that formula a little bit more? So a person is coming up with a unique idea and they're adding to it some new technology that isn't currently there. Like in the last formula, you had a simple idea. This is a unique idea. And then to license, you have an existing technology that's already there, but you're adding something to it. And there's three or more players in the market. So for a formula to think about two different ways, whether you should develop a manufacturing company for your product or whether you should license it to manufacture a product, you have that second formula there with your unique idea. Did you want to expand a little bit on that, of making a distinction between whether you should license it or develop a manufacturing company?
I think the most important choice is what's right for you, not right for the product. You will fail if you do what's right for the product over what's right for you every time. So
okay.
Most inventors are not wired up. A lot of inventors are not wired up to run a company. And when I highlight all the things you need to do to run a company and all the things you need to do when you license, they're like, literally, the people I talk to, there's plenty of people out there that want to run a company, so don't get me wrong. But 9 times out of 10, or even more, probably 19 times out of 20, they're like, oh, no, I want a license. So I would never recommend starting a business and selling the product yourself if you don't understand what's involved and don't want to do all that stuff.
And some people have more resources and don't mind, or maybe they're going to pull together some more partners to come up with the money to handle and build in the infrastructure that you need to manufacture a product.
Here's the thing. When you manufacture your own product and you work your butt off for probably years to get into retailers, you're a one SKU, one product company. Retailers don't like you. So let's say you got your shovel into Lowe's, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe, okay, let's say you got into Lowe's. The first person that buyer at that Lowe's store is going to kick to the curb is you. So when a manufacturer with 20 products comes in and says to Bob the buyer at Lowe's, hey, you know, I got these new products. You know, I'd like to get this new one on the shelf. They're going to look around at what they can kick off, and it's that company with one product. Even if it's selling okay, because they want to make that company, that manufacturer that's in their store with 20 products, because they're giving them deep discounts, whatever,
yeah,
all that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So when you license to that big company, you are that big company. Now, I admire people that want to start their own business and make and sell their own product, but you're not going to last long as a company unless you have a product line, because you're going to work your butt off to get distribution in all these stores, and then you're going to have to put other products in there. Otherwise, they'll continue to see you as a one SKU, one product company, and eventually you're going to get kicked out of the store.
So,
and that's not.
Yeah, so it makes sense to me for those who are setting up a manufacturing company, which they don't always think about from an entrepreneurial perspective. If they've got a product that's really successful, and there's a diagram of the growth of the product, and then there's always a decline or a tapering off of the sales of a product. And so it's important for them to keep inventing.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
Why I get a little bit confused with, because I think you're talking about starting two companies, just different concepts behind the company. So, because you have to have, in order to license a product, you still have to have a company, but it's not a manufacturing company. It's a product,
right.
you know, it's a service business, right? If
not
you're
really
setting up a license.
When you're a professional product developer, you come up with new product ideas and you pitch into companies.
Right.
One day it might be pitching dog toys, the next day a medical device. Maybe you tend to stick to an industry that's always advantageous. Let's say you start doing bicycles, you license one bicycle product, you get to know a whole bunch of companies, and then, you know, you license another bicycle product, another one. So it is a company per se, but it's you're not manufacturing and selling the product yourself. You're developing and renting or leasing products and moving on. So there isn't the day-to-day grind of people wanting a paycheck for you or delivery or administrative work. Now, there is, if you're really a pro and you want to license a lot of products, you have to dedicate yourself to every week or every day work on licensing more products.
Yeah, and I like all the ideas. I mean, there's a ton of ideas in one simple idea, too, of how to keep generating product ideas, you know, by going online or going to different places like a mall and looking at all the products in the store just to get ideas of things. And you've got some criteria that's listed in the book of how to evaluate the products that you're looking at to see if there's a niche in the marketplace. And like one idea that I really liked was, if you're looking for some product ideas to complement by two ideas that are close together, like in a kitchen or in a garage, or, you know, like a, I don't know, like a mixing bowl and a mixer and maybe the utensils that you use. I know it's a flooded market right now with those ideas. I see so many products in the marketplace for kitchen items.
Kitchen is a great category, actually. You know, and just because you see a lot of products there doesn't mean there's not room for one more. It's amazing in some categories. I kind of get your point, though. Like, oh, man, there's so much there already.
Yeah, right.
Really, is there really room for one more? And you'd be surprised. In some categories, yes, there's always room for one more, because people will tend to buy kitchen gadgets in particular, just over, a lot of them sit in the drawer, I know.
Yeah.
But
there are different types of spatulas that, or even hot pads that have come out now, this rubbery kind of silicone texture for hot pads. I'm like, wow, now that is a great idea. You know, I was thinking, oh, aren't there enough hot pads, you know, in the marketplace already? And then this new one comes out and it really works well. with this silicone kind of texture to it. So what I like about the book is there's lots of different light bulb moments that I had while I was reading through it, and different ways that you can carve out a process for your creative self to keep inventing.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You can always come up with more ideas if you have the process down. Yeah, that's like a whole nother session if I wanted to go into teaching people how to invent.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And we're running out of time as we're talking about that. Well, I think that what you guys are doing is great. I want to make sure that I talked with you so that I could have your information out to our listeners and to keep your name out there as a resource for people who need some really hands-on, good, solid coaching from people who are already very successful.
Well, thank you so much for having me on, Nancy.
Yeah, thank you for being here and for being so open and for talking about the concepts and also taking a risk and sharing a little bit more about yourself.
Cool, it was fun. It was fun.
All right, and hopefully we'll be connecting again in the future.
All right.
So, and thanks, Mike Cabea, sound engineer and photographer and great friend. So everybody keep listening and keep creating and inventing new ideas and try some open innovation concepts and even looking at one simple idea in the future and when you go shopping next. All right. See you next Monday. Do you want to promote your business and grow in your leadership skills? Here are a few ways you can promote your business and get leadership help through We Mentor, Inc. You can be a podcast guest. Challenge yourself to share who you are on air. We'll help you out. Secondly, you can sponsor our podcast program. You can invest a small fee to have you and your company name announced at the beginning and end of one or more shows. The third way that you can promote your business and grow in your leadership skills is you can set up an individual strategy session to do work one-on-one with me, focusing on specific life and leadership issues and skills you want to acquire. Or the fourth way is you can join an entrepreneurial leadership and mentoring lab. These ELM labs start throughout the year. They are small groups of 5 to 9 business owners who are out to profoundly shift their lives and lead with authenticity. In 2016, I became a registered yoga instructor and mindfulness meditation teacher. I also became certified online with Brené Brown's Brave Leadership and Courage Works courses to learn an effective process of being all in, falling, getting up, and trying again. In turn, I can mentor others in how to dare greatly and rise strong. I feel better equipped to help you forge ahead in these times of great uncertainty. Our Entrepreneurial Leadership and Mentoring Lab process is an integrated approach to leadership development. We do yoga, meditation, and leadership revolution skill setting. Yes, we will help you learn how to strengthen your body, strengthen your mind, and increase your emotional stamina as part of our leadership development process. Along with learning about real-world business planning and strategic planning, we do what works. Get involved, get started. You can reach me at 612-804-8920 or go to wementor.com and connect with us. Lastly, if you like our podcast program, help us keep it going. You can donate to our program. Just go to the wementor.com website, click on Buy button, and fill in the donation amount that you would like to contribute. We appreciate any and all contributions. See you next week.